Good morning, and once again, welcome as we assemble together to worship God. I always consider it a privilege to stand before you and share with you. It is my hope that the things that are said are in accord with the Word of God, that we can apply them to our lives and look for ways to share them with others. A couple of points that I want to make, or a couple of thoughts I want to give before I actually get into the lesson. First of all, I want to thank Jerry for leading that song. He asked me before the service, is there a song that goes with the lesson this morning? Well, I'm going to talk about evil. So what song goes along with evil? But actually, that particular song is a pretty good song to help us, because what we're dealing with is questions about God. The other thing is, if you notice on your outline, I want to apologize once again for the date. I'll tell you what happened is I have a template at home that I use that I just write over it every week from week to week, and then I move forward the date by 7 days. And if you'll note, last week's was wrong. I moved it forward to 7 days, and I guess if I had to go forward 14 days, I'd have to take my shoes off to count. So nevertheless, I will get that corrected. As a matter of fact, tonight's outline is right. So I, at least on the date. And it's not going to happen again this year. So. At least that's the hope. So, on to the lesson at hand. We are bringing a study dealing with the subject of God to a conclusion. Last year, we gave considerable thought to addressing the subject of who God is. And as I have said all along, my focus in this entire series of lessons is so that we might better know God, so that we can take Him as seriously as we ought to. And I know a couple of weeks ago I said I just had a couple of more lessons that I wanted to present on this topic. Well, as of today's lesson, I have four more lessons. So this is a series that continues to grow, and there's a reason why I went ahead and wanted to expand this lesson. And that is because the next four lessons that I present are probably the most relevant whereas today is concerned, and that's not to dismiss the other lessons in dealing with the fact that there is a God and identifying the character of God. But these are the lessons of practical application. Today's lesson and next week's lesson I was going to put together in one, but there's just too much to say about that. And that's because what I want to address is I want to address some difficult questions, some hard questions that people ask concerning God, and primarily they are questions that people who doubt the existence of God or who become angry with God, or things they don't understand about God, that they ask, and we need to know the answers. What we're going to deal with today is, why does God allow evil? Why does God allow suffering in this world? And those are things we need to give consideration to. Next week, I want to talk about the subject of, will God actually send people to hell? I want to talk about the fact of why did God harden Pharaoh's heart? And other such things. Those are some of the lessons that we are going to be dealing with over the course of the next 2 weeks. And as I said, these are important questions, and questions we need to know how to answer and give consideration to. So that's why I wanted to spend some time with that. Today, why does God allow evil? Or questions about God, part one, as far as that goes. So, let's go ahead and delve into this particular study, because there's actually a great deal to be said about this particular study. First of all, when we ask the question, why does God allow evil, understand that the reason this question is asked is, again, one is it's used as an argument against God. And because basically what the argument will go is something like this. You say that God is a God of love, and you say that God is all-powerful. Now, if God is all-powerful and a God of love, why is it that evil is so powerful in this world? It is either because God is not all-powerful, or it is because God really doesn't love us. And that's basically the argument that is made. Or you might hear some say, I don't want to worship a God who allows this type of evil in the world. And examples of that is, look at what happened in Haiti just this past week. The estimates of death as a result of that disaster could go upwards of 150,000 souls. And people ask, why? Why does God allow this to happen? Well, there's a sense in which He allows it, and there's another sense in which we need to understand that it very much may not be the hand of God at work, and probably is not the hand of God, as we're going to see in this lesson. Now, the first thing we need to understand as we present this lesson and clear up some things and mention some things, much of what we've already talked about as we've dealt with the attributes of God, is number one, God does not commit evil. There is nothing evil about God. And at the same time, He does not tempt us. That is, He does not tempt man to do evil. In James chapter 1 and in verse number 13, James there said, "Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does He Himself tempt anyone." Let that be clearly understood. If you understand the God of the Bible, know this. He loves you. And He wants you to do what is right. He is not going to in any way encourage you to do that which is wrong. He's not going to do anything that's going to cause you to commit evil in your life. So keep that in mind. And another thing as we go through our study this morning, that this is not a question about the power of God. And what I mean by that is I'm going on the assumption that we accept the omnipotence of God, that He is all-powerful. There was a lesson presented on this last year dealing with the attributes of God, and so I'm just going to build on that just for the sake of time. So with the fact that there's evil in this world, it's not the fact that God does not have power to stop it. He could. As a matter of fact, there are a number of different possible options that God could have taken where this world is concerned. Number one, He could, even though there's evil in the world, He could intervene against evil every time that it happens. But I want you to think about that for a moment. If God were to intervene every time that evil happens in this life, what does that do about the one who engages in evil? The corrupt individual. For example, you could look at the minor example of, say, a plumber who does shoddy work. You know, he puts a pipe under your house and he doesn't do it right and he rips you off. What he does is evil. Now, when that pipe leaks, that's a result of the evil. If God were to intervene, that means that He's going to have to stop that pipe from leaking. Like I said, I know it's kind of a trivial example of it. Look at another example. What about, the drunk driver that kills somebody or wounds somebody, that type of a thing. You know, if God were to intervene every time, He's enabling that drunk person to get away with his sinful conduct. So that's a result of that. Another possibility is He could remove those who commit evil. You know, you've got people who are given over to evil in this life and it seems that all they do is serve the wicked one. Well, let's suppose that to deal with evil, God removed those who were wicked. Let me ask you a question. How many people would be in this building if God removed those who committed wicked acts? There would be nobody left. Therefore, it's not really a rational possibility. But then there's also the possibility of He could make us so that we could not commit evil. So that we would not do that which is a bad thing. But the challenge to that is if God were to do that, basically what He's doing is He is removing man's free will. He is removing the ability of man to serve and worship God for himself. The way I would describe this is in Matthew chapter 3 and verse number 9, John there talked about how God could make children of Abraham out of these stones. You know, if God wanted robots, and that was the point he was making, he could just create them. And it is very true that God has the power to accomplish any and every one of these options. But the question is that really what is best? The fact that there is evil in this world, the fact that there is suffering in this world, can good come out of that? That's really what we are looking at as we try to answer this particular question this morning. And the truth is the fact that God allows evil and that God allows suffering in this world, it's actually because He wants what is best for us. And that's why He created a real world with real choices and real consequences to our actions. In other words, when we worship God, if we worship God, it's going to be by our choice. And in understanding why evil exists, we need to keep that thought in mind. That is, if you will, one of three key principles that I want to bring out in this lesson, which I'm going to talk about a little more. But before I do talk a little more about the free will of man, first of all, what is evil? You know, that's really an interesting question. I was asking somebody earlier this week, have you thought about that? How would you define the word evil? Kind of interesting to think about. I'll give you a couple of definitions that are given. McClintock and Strong's, in defining the word, they begin by basically describing it as discord or disturbance in the order of the universe. Whenever you have discord in this universe, you have a form of evil. Now, they go on and they describe there's two different types of evil, or two different forms of evil. Number one, there's natural evil. And it is whatever destroys or any way disturbs the perfection of natural beings, such as blindness, disease, death, so on and so forth. That's natural evil. It's things that happen in this life. But then there's also moral evil, which is described as the disagreement between the actions of a moral agent and the rule of those actions, whatever it be. So you have the disagreement of actions between God. Basically, if you disobey God, you commit evil. That's the simple way of describing that particular definition. Now, Nelson's Illustrated Bible Dictionary describes evil as a force that opposes God and His work of righteousness in this world. So anything that opposes God and righteousness would be defined as evil. But there's another thought that, as I was studying, this came up several times, and it's really interesting to think about. And that is, evil is the absence of good. And that's really something that to just sit down and contemplate that for a moment. You know, it's the absence of good, just the way that darkness is the absence of light. The same way that cold is the absence of heat. In other words, the reason there is evil in this world is instances of where God has withheld His goodness, if you will, or allowed in certain circumstances His goodness not to prevail. And that's really something to think about. 1 John 1 verse 5, God is light, and in Him is no darkness at all. You realize that when God created the world in Genesis chapter 1, about six times it says God said it was good. And then when He finished the creation after the sixth day, in verse number 31 of Genesis chapter 1, it said, God saw everything that He had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Now give consideration that what God created is good. And it was good. And everything God created was good. It wasn't until Satan came along that evil entered the picture. What God created was completely good. And whenever you have evil, what you have is you have the lack or absence of good. And to the degree that something is evil, it is to the degree that it is not good. Interesting thought about good and evil. You realize that those are moral terms? In other words, the fact that we comprehend the idea of good and evil, it actually goes against evolution. It goes against nature itself. You think about that. If this world is just the product of physical existence, and there's no divine spiritual being, and there's no accountability, then this world's about survival. It's about survival of the fittest. And there really is no such thing as morally good, or being good, or evil. What happens is just a course of nature. Of course, man doesn't know better than that, I should say. Man knows better than that because of the way he was created. So that's one way to look at the idea of evil, and it's probably the best way to look at evil, is it is the absence of good. Now, know this. It was Satan who introduced evil to this world. When he came to Eve, and then Adam in the garden, he introduced evil. He introduced doubt in the mind of Eve, and he lied to Eve and did other things. But I want you to know that even after Satan introduced evil, that's not when evil came or was a part of this earth. It wasn't until man chose to accept it. And I want you to know that that is the reason why there is evil in this world. That is the reason why there is moral evil. That is the reason why there is sin in this world. Because Adam and Eve chose to sin. That's also, if you want to think about it, that's also why there's disaster in this world. You realize that as a result of the sin of Adam and Eve, God cursed the earth, if you will. And what did He do in cursing the earth? He removed some of His goodness. In Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 19, Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 19, Paul there said, "Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness of the transgression of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come." So he goes on and he talks about there that death came as a result of the sin of Adam. Death is a consequence of sin. And I know that there are those out there who say we inherit the sin of Adam. That's not true. The only sin you're going to stand before God and answer for is the sins that you commit. But we do inherit the consequences of the sin of Adam. And that's why there's evil in this world. The reason there's evil is because of sin. But that still leads to asking the question, why does evil exist? Why does God allow it? And the answer is, He does. God does allow it. We've already pointed out He could have taken it away. But there's actually a good reason why evil is here. And it has to do with the fact that man has a choice. When God created man, He created him as a free moral agent. And what that means is you hold your destiny in your hand. If you go to heaven when this life is over, it's up to you. If you don't go to heaven when this life is over, it's up to you. You have to make the choice. You see, God could have created robots, but instead, He wanted to create one who would worship Him because He wanted to do so. He wanted to create someone who would worship Him because it was His desire. He wanted somebody who would love Him because he knows who He is. And He appreciates all the good that He has done for him. If there were no evil in this world, that would not happen. God could have created us like robots. He could have even created us with robots and created in us love for Him. But what would that have accomplished as far as we are concerned? We can better appreciate God because of the fact that we have a choice. And know this, that since the beginning of time, since the beginning of this world, after God put Adam and Eve on this earth, man has had a choice. Why did Eve and Adam sin? They sinned because God gave them a choice in the garden. and they chose to disobey God's command in Genesis 2, 16 and 17. Look around you. And this is a great illustration. When God says, you look around you, there's all kinds of trees, all kinds of fruit. Eat whatever you want except for one tree. You see this tree right here? Don't eat of this tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And he warned him, the day you eat it, you will die. You will be separated from me. That was the warning. So man was given from the very beginning a choice. And he did not choose wisely. All throughout the Bible, there's choices. Joshua 4, 24, verse 15, he's about to die. He's old. The children of Israel have inherited the promised land. And Joshua knows where they're going. He knows the direction that Israel is headed. He can see it. He can see it in their hearts. He can see it in their actions. They're already choosing wrongly. They haven't completely obeyed God. God said, drive out the enemies. Why hadn't they done it? We'll talk about that next. You know, why did God destroy the Amalekites? They didn't obey. But as a result of that, Joshua challenges them. Choose for yourself this day who you will serve. That was the challenge that he offered to them. In 1 Kings chapter 18 and in verse number 21, 1 Kings chapter 18 and in verse number 21, you read there in that particular text there, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal, follow him. That was the challenge of Elijah on Mount Carmel. How long are you going to not make up your mind? Pick who you're going to serve. In the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 17 or 7, verses 13 and 14, in the Sermon on the Mount, he talked about how strive to enter by the narrow gate, which leads to life eternal. Because broad is the way that leads to destruction. And many follow and go in by that way. Jesus said there's two paths. You pick the path that you are going to follow. In Romans chapter 6 and in verse number 16, Paul said, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves who you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? Choice. That's what the Bible is about. And if you want to know why evil is in this world, why God allows evil, it's so that we can choose to do that which is right. And when we choose to do what's right, we are better off. So understand this. Why does God allow evil? Number one principle to consider there is the fact that because He wanted free moral agents. He wanted to give us a choice of whether to obey Him or not. And know this, that the choices that you make are going to determine where you will spend eternity. Now, having said that, there are some other things that I want us to give consideration to. And that is the fact that, you know, when people say, God should prevent this or God should prevent that, I want you to realize that God does at times actually prevent evil. We may not think about that, but imagine what this world would be like if God didn't do anything. The fact is there are times when He does. There are things that He has done to make this world a better place, to offset the evil, if you will. Number one, He's given us a conscience. You know, the fact that we, when we do wrong, feel bad about it. Isn't God combating evil or helping us with our choices? Isn't that what He's doing there? Helping us to make the right choice so that we'll do good instead of evil. Number two, He gave us the gospel. He gave us His message. He tells us what we need to do to be pleasing to Him. How to remove evil from our lives. That's what the gospel is about. And if that were not enough, He sent Jesus to die. And now, in so doing, He provided a way for us, even when we do evil, to be forgiven of our evil acts. So you could say he provided a way to offset the consequences of evil. But there's something else I want you to think about in the fact that Jesus sent, or God sent Jesus to this earth to die for us. When Jesus came to this earth, as a human being, he now understands us better. And we read about that in Hebrews chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. In Hebrews chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, it talks there about how He knows what we're going through. In all things He had to be made like His brethren, that He might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that He Himself has suffered being tempted, He is able to aid those who are tempted. I want you to know that Jesus understands. And Jesus is able to help us deal with whatever problems we face in this life. One author described this way. Said, for whatever reason God chose to make man as he is, limited and suffering and subject to sorrows and death, he had the honesty and the courage to take his own medicine. Whatever game he is playing with his creation, and that's not meant in a bad way, he has kept his own rules and played fair. He can exact nothing from man that he has not exacted from himself. Now what that's saying is God sent Jesus to this earth and he understands. God knows what we're going through and he made sure that he would know what we're going through. And we can't say you don't understand. We can't say that to God because He does understand. He came to this earth. And He did that to help us overcome evil. And if that were not enough, we have assurance as children of God that there's no temptation that has overtaken us such as common to man. But God is faithful and who will not allow us to be tempted beyond what we are able. But that temptation will make the way of escape. We may bear it. God's promised us that He's not going to give us anything that we cannot handle. Now, we may reason in our own mind that we can't handle it, decide that we don't want to handle it, but I want you to know that you can. And as a child of God, if you're putting your trust in Him, there's nothing going to happen to you that you cannot deal with in this life. When Jesus in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28 said, come to me all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Are you burdened? Come to me. I'll help you with that burden. So God's provided many ways to help us overcome evil in this life. And here's another question. Even as you look at the world as it progresses, who knows when God is not intervening even more specifically than that? Who knows what God doesn't stop? Who knows whether or not God has stopped a nuclear terrorist attack in the United States of America or wherever in the world? Who knows? Who knows why a shoe doesn't work to blow up an airplane or whatever that guy did a couple of weeks ago? Why? Who knows why he failed? Did God have a part in that? We don't know. I'll tell you this, when you study the history of the Bible, you'll find that there were many times God did intervene. You have the flood. You have the fact that Babylon fell. You have the fall of the nations of Israel and Judah because of their wickedness, and over the various things that He did where that was concerned. You have the fall of Rome. You have the example of Sodom and Gomorrah. We're told, given examples of God intervening. Who knows whether He does that today? So don't say that God is not in control, and that's the point there. Who knows what He does where evil is concerned. So that gives us a little bit of understanding of dealing with God and evil and why it exists. It exists so that we have a choice. And along with answering that question, you also have the question, why does He allow suffering? It goes along with that. Basically, they're related to one another. But the truth is that because of evil and suffering and because man has a choice, and here's point number two, principle number two that I want you to think about, and that is the fact that evil can make man better. It can actually make you a better person. Suffering can make you a better person. Now let's look at why that is the case. Now, you can look at reasons why people suffer, and you know, sometimes people suffer directly as a result of sin. And if you think about it, how much suffering actually happens because of sin? And I'm talking about directly. The drunk driver was sinning when he injured somebody else. It may not be your sin, but somebody somewhere committed sin. And where there is sin, there are consequences. Now, that's not always true. But more often than not, that's why suffering happens in this world. There's usually some sin in there. You know, when people get sick, can you blame God if you abused your body? If you didn't eat properly, if you abused substances, can you blame God? No, it's your fault. You did it. So that's the truth with many instances to consider when you deal with suffering. However, know this, that when man suffers, it can produce good. Let's just look at a few examples of it. Number one, suffering can humble us. I wonder, you know, if there was no suffering in this world, if there was no evil in this world, and if good always won, and if the wicked were always caught and always punished, and we had what you might describe as a utopian society, how often would man think about God? Would he ever think about God? If everything is going great, if everything is perfect, why would man think about God? Wouldn't he just think about himself? Especially if every time he set out to mess up, God straightened him out. That's really something to think about. Good can come from it. And I'll tell you what, that's true whether you're dealing with disasters. How often does disaster bring out good in people? Look at everything that is happening this week as a result of what happened in Haiti. It brings out good in people. It humbles people. I'm reminded of the example of Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse number 7. This is where Paul talks about this thorn in the flesh that he has. And the point that he makes there is that it was a messenger of Satan. And he says there, beginning in verse number 7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure." Now he talks about how he pleaded with God three times, "Take it away from me." And I suspect that whatever that thorn in the flesh was, and we don't know, people argue over it. Probably people divide over it. They divide over everything else. But it doesn't matter. I do know this. I suspect that if Paul didn't have that thorn in the flesh, he could do a better job of preaching the gospel somehow. But nevertheless, God said, you know, as you read in that text, it says, verse number 9, "He said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses." Why? For Christ's sake. "For when I am weak, then I am strong." Suffering can make you a better person. If you have a right attitude, suffering will humble you. It will bring you down to this earth. And that happens so much. How often is it when you have some great disaster, and the greater the disaster, people start turning back to God? Right? So it can cause people to appreciate God. And at the same time, it can produce character. as you deal with whatever problems you have in this life, it can just make you a better person. In James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, the way that he begins that letter, he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." It's going to make you a better person, he says there. In Romans chapter 5, Paul goes into even more detail concerning that. Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 3, he says, "And not only that, but we also glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope." Now, hope does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. Suffering can make us better people. But something else that suffering can do is it can cause us to repent and turn from our sins. It can cause us to turn to God the way that we ought to. So much more could be said about that, but time does not permit. But something else it does, and this is a real point for us to give consideration to. And that is the fact that suffering makes this world less attractive. God has promised us a home in heaven when this life is over if we are faithful to Him. What incentive do we have to be faithful to Him? If everything is utopian in this world, why do we want to change? Why do we want to look for something better? Why would we describe ourselves as sojourners and pilgrims? Why would we seek a heavenly city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God? If this world were perfect, if there were no sin, if there were no suffering, if there were no evil in this world, we would want to stay around. What is it that causes the Christian to groan to leave this world? And to make sure he's right with God so that when he leaves this world, he can spend eternity with God. It's the suffering and the evil that we are in the midst of. So you know very, very clearly that good can come from suffering. And know that it can bring out the best in us. It can bring out the good. And that's the point to consider. Now, someone might ask about that. Well, why does he allow the godly to suffer? I suspect there are individuals who obey the gospel thinking that my problems are all going to disappear. I become a Christian. Now, I'm in a different league where God is concerned. Therefore, He's going to treat me differently than those of the world, and I'm not going to suffer anymore. And all of a sudden, he suffers. Sometimes, even worse, as a result, as a consequence of becoming a Christian. There are many who, as a result of that, actually leave God. How often is it when things don't go the way they want, they lose a loved one that they don't think they should have lost, and they blame God, and they quit on God? I tell you what, that person doesn't understand what it means to be a Christian. He doesn't truly love and appreciate God. But here's the truth. Suppose that God did, or here's a thought I should say, suppose that God did remove suffering from the righteous. You think there would be any unrighteous people left in this world? I suspect that if God removed all suffering, it wouldn't be long before everybody would obey the gospel because they don't want to suffer anymore. So think about that. And that leads us back to all those scenarios about this world and wanting the things of this world. So, as a Christian, suffering can do you good as well. You know, how often do we hear the question, why me? You know, why me? Why is this happening to me? I've done everything right. Well, here's the real question. Why not me? What makes me so special that God should exempt me from what everybody else goes through? when it's not about this world. It's not supposed to be about this world. But here's another thought. And that is, when it comes to disaster, when it comes to suffering, when it comes to dealing with evil, who is better equipped to handle suffering than a Christian? Have you thought about that? You know, because God is on our side, because we understand God, because we know what this world is about, because we realize the reason we are here is to prepare to get out of here. We understand that. Who's better equipped to deal with suffering and evil than a Christian? A true Christian. That's really something to think about. God's given us the tools that we need so that we can handle it. And therein lies hope. Therein lies confidence. Well, of course, all that leads to a third and final question, and that is, how much suffering should God actually allow to happen? And I contend that this is the real issue. I contend that the majority of people say, you know what, if God allows a little bit of suffering, it's okay. It's just the big disasters. Or, I realize people are going to die, but why does it have to be my son? You know, it's okay if it's everybody else. I can understand that. But when it hits home and it becomes personal, that's when all of a sudden things are different. And that's not supposed to happen. It's supposed to happen to everybody else. Why does God, how much suffering should God actually allow? How big of a disaster can God permit before you start blaming Him for what's going on? There are some thoughts in dealing with that. Principle number 3. Write it down. Be careful before you start questioning God. You better be careful before you do that. Before you start becoming a judge of what He should do and what He shouldn't do and when He should do it and when He shouldn't do it. In Romans chapter 9 and verse number 19, Paul there said, You will say to me then, why does He still find fault? For who has resisted His will? But indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, why have you made me like this? Does not the potter have power over the clay, from the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor? What if God, wanting to show His wrath and to make His power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, and that He might make known the riches of His glory on the vessels of mercy which He has prepared beforehand for glory? Even us whom He called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. Paul's saying in that verse, don't question God. When it comes down to the specifics, don't ask God why this and why not this. You be careful when you start putting yourself in that position. In Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9, you read there, my ways are not your ways, nor are my thoughts your thoughts. His ways and thoughts are higher than ours. We don't understand. And the point that I am making in that is God does care. He's in control. He knows what He is doing. I know, as Paul said in Romans chapter 8 and verse number 28, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to this purpose. Now, as I understand that verse, it's talking about the overall scheme of things. It's not talking about every individual act that we commit. He says, all things work together for good. God's going to accomplish His purpose. And His purpose is good. Because God does not want you to be lost. He is in control where this world is concerned. He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world, 1 John chapter 4 and verse 4 says. Romans chapter 11 and verse number 33, Paul there said, oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His judgments, and His ways past finding out. For who knows the mind of the Lord? Or who has become His counselor? Or who has first given to Him and it shall not be repaid to Him? For of Him and through Him and to Him are all things, to whom belong glory forever. Amen. He's saying don't question God. And finally, in Proverbs 3 verse 5, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He shall direct your paths. I'll tell you where real trust comes. And when you face evil in this world and when you face suffering in this world, the answer is trust in God. So we can see suffering and evil in this world. God wants what is best for us. But He's not going to force you to accept Him. Just know this. If you choose to reject Him, you're going to answer for it one day. And thus the lesson is yours.